Everyone, and welcome to minute 89 of season 10 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 crime thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alex Marcus, the podcast director of PopBreak.com. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Hey, Rob, I have changed my hat and my mustache is off. I am ready to commit to the end of this movie.
Wait, just give me the gun, though.
No, you can't have it.
Oh, okay. Then I'll just take your money.
Okay. That's a fair trade.
I think that's what it comes down to. So minute 89 begins with blue and green looting gray and ends with blue giving green instructions on where they should go to rendezvous. So we basically ended things yesterday with Blue finally either getting having enough of Gray or defending himself against Gray. You can look at it either way, but either way, Gray is out of the picture. And so Blue and Gray just went and started taking the money out of all the pockets that we saw last week. They all meticulously put the bills in different pockets and stuff like that. You can sort of see that they are avoiding the ones in his breast pocket that are filled with blood. Keeping that on the outside.
So I guess that's the sort of thing you notice when you've watched as many times as you have.
Yes. Well, again, it's much more difficult to launder money that way.
Yes. Although if it was covered in blood, it would need to be laundered more literally.
I meant literally. I was literally referring to it. So, yeah, and then we see Brown trying to keep watch, looking down the train tunnel, making sure nothing's coming, and he doesn't see anything. And then we get a shot of him just standing there waiting, and then we see the hippie who we haven't seen since yesterday crawling in the ground. He's actually in he's lying prone, getting ready to shoot, which I gotta say, I don't know if it's just because he's injured, but this is a great position for him to be in because he's also keeping himself as camouflaged as possible and, being low on the ground.
Hmm. I guess it's that tactical training that those undercover subway police get.
Apparently. And then we see him cock the gun, and then I like the editing here. And then they show Brown sort of like lean into the train area and then lean back, and they give this hippie enough time to take the shot, which again I like. And then he just needs one shot. He just takes one shot, and we right in the back. We see Mr. Brown react by touching his back, knowing that something's happened. And immediately Green and Blue are alerted to the whole fact. Blue takes out his gun, and he sees Brown sort of stumble towards him a little bit, in the doorway, I guess you can say. And, we know that Brown stutters. It looks like he's trying to say something but can't say something. And then just falls backwards onto the tracks, and they give us a big thud as the body lands on the ground. And at this point, Blue starts into action and runs down the stairs while Green cowers on the side, which again tells us once again so much about these characters, about who they are. Blue is not afraid to run towards danger. Obviously, as long as he's protected, he's got his gun out. And Green is the opposite. Green isn't familiar with this type of stuff, and he's gonna try and stay as hidden as possible. And then the next thing that Blue does is he looks up at Green, realizes he's on his own, and then shatters the light bulb that's right in this entranceway. And which again is quite smart. No need to give the shooter a little more information as to who you are, what you are, what you're doing, stuff like that. And then we hear another shot ring out. Now, the shot ricochets really weirdly because, I mean, from what we can see, Brown was shot in the back, right? Which means that the shooter was, you know, I'm trying to think of the directions to try and show it. The direction is that the shooter was behind him. But when you look, you hear a shot ring out, and it ricochets off the exit sign, which is right next to Blue. Which then doesn't make any sense. Because
you think it could have been a friendly fire situation?
Who? From who?
I don't. I guess that's a good question. I like. Could it have been coming? Could it be two separate shots? Like, could the one shot have hit the exit sign, and that shot ricocheted into like a wall or something, causing Blue to shoot and ending up shooting Brown by accident?
No. Blue didn't shoot Brown. We know that the hippie shot Brown. That goes without saying. But I'm saying the direction that he's shooting from. He's shooting from in front of us, basically. You know, Blue is standing with his back to the wall, and so the gunshots are coming from behind him. But the ricochet on the exit sign, it hits the X. So the only possibility is that, you know, the hippie hit the wall in front, you know, opposite the exit sign, and it bounced back and hit the exit sign. But it still doesn't make very much sense. I think the idea is just to let us see the shot. You know, the sound ring out here.
Like, it's meant to convey the sort of like chaos of the moment,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. That's right.
Could be.
Yeah. Again, one of the things about doing movies this way is that, you know, there are questions you can answer that you'll never get answered.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a question of trying to figure it out. And trying to think of what makes the most sense. Which, when it comes to movies, you never know if it really will make the most sense or not. You know, because it all depends on the script and the way that they did the production.
And also, you know, a sequence like this, what the director is hoping for is for you to get caught up in the momentum of the event, and so for it to feel really engaging and exciting, and for you to get a sense of the geography of the action, but have that be sort of a more implicit, emotional, visceral experience. I think he's not looking necessarily for us to like diagram every second in the way that we
no,
are.
No, of course not. Nobody
for
nobody
a sequence
expects,
like that.
Nobody expects someone to be doing the crazy things we're doing. Come on.
Yeah.
Especially not 51 years ago. Yeah. Let alone people who made movies 5-10 years ago. You know. So yeah. Of course. No, I'm not concerned about that at all. I don't think Joseph Sargent thought for a second that someone was going to be forensically, you know, slicing up his movie and checking, trying to understand more about the different things that happen here. I don't think so.
You don't think he was really ahead of his time predicting podcasts in the 1970s?
He might have been, but I can't guarantee that. But yeah. So then, at this point, Blue hits another light bulb to burn that one out also, and you know we see that Green is getting even more worried and scared, and then he sneezes.
Gesundheit.
Exactly. Which you know sort of is going to be giving a little bit away, and Blue isn't happy about that obviously. And then Blue jumps down onto the track. And the hippie shoots at him again. We see another shot ring out. So, you know, and then Blue shoots back at him and then hides behind a beam trying to take cover. And so what's great here is he's trying to figure out who's shooting at him. He has no idea who this is. You know, no clue whatsoever. And what we've seen is that basically the hippie has shot four shots, and Blue has shot one shot. Now, the type of gun that the hippie has is a Colt Detective Special, which only has six rounds in it. Meaning he shot four out of his six rounds already. So I don't know what his backup plan is if he doesn't end up hitting. He hit one guy out of the four shots, but that's about it.
Yeah, I would hope he's just, his hope is that he can just keep engaging with them long enough for backup to come.
Yeah, but with six bullets, you're not going to be able to engage for that long.
And, no, that is
and
definitely
he
true.
Knows, and he knows these guys have automatic weapons. You know, he doesn't know that they've thrown them off to the side. You know, that's the thing. So you got to give him a lot of credit for what he's done here then. You know, it's a little bit more courageous than one might think.
Yeah. Well, and I think he also seems to believe that the position that he has put himself in terms of like the sub being on the ground in the subway and like he's down low, like you were talking about, like the tactical position, he seems to think he is somewhat insulated from, like, not completely, obviously, like he's not hiding behind something, but he seems to feel confident that his placement is such that he could be reasonably defended from attack. So I think that's part of it, but it's definitely, I think he's going into this expecting to not make it, and he's just trying to stop as many people as he can.
Right. Okay. Especially since he himself has gone through the quote unquote trauma of being a hostage.
And he's already fallen front, like he's already thrown himself off a moving subway cart into, like, no one does that without, like, there is already a sense of I'm going to risk my life in order to make this happen. Correct. You know?
Yeah. It's true. And then we get another shot of Green, who is clearly completely scared at this point. Because I think he's thinking to himself, what happens if Blue gets shot right now? You know, what am I going to do? You know, that type of thing. So he calls out, Mr. Blue, did you get him? And Mr. Blue whispers back to him and goes, you go on ahead. We'll meet where we planned. And, you know, Green is I guess happy and sad at the same time that this is the instructions that he's being given, but he realizes he doesn't have much of a choice, you know, because he definitely knows that he's not going to be able to fight back against whoever's there.
He is not up for a firefight.
No. And then he gets ready to stand up, and as he's getting up, the minute ends. So, I mean, again, it's a very concise 60 seconds that we have here, because there isn't so much that's really going on, but it's an important minute, because it's showing us a lot about these various characters.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of our main characters are dead by the end of this minute, so it's somewhat important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see
our team is broken up. Someone has left.
That's right. You know, we've half the team is gone.
Yes.
they've lost actually I was gonna say the non-primary colors, but green is not a primary color. Okay, whatever. They've lost the blue and greens. They've lost everything but the blue and greens. Yes. They've lost the more saturated colors of brown and gray. How's that?
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
No, just it's a very like high action, high octane sort of moment. We're really having like our action climax. We're in the midst of it at this point. And yeah, I'm having a good time. I'm happy that this is going on. And, you know, I may have last episode quibbled a bit with the conflict as it was executed, but now we're on much safer ground as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think Mr. Brown should have died this way?
I think that Mr. Brown exists to perish in this moment, right? Because you need to dispense with him. He has served his purpose.
Right. He always reminds me of Lurch.
And also, like, you also need it to feel like we're ratcheting up the stakes. And like the good guys are getting a win by taking out one of their men, right? So like I think that's an important way of continuing to build the tension while like feeling like anything could happen now, right? Because the bad guys, the criminals, they've been in command of their element this entire time. They've gotten everything that they've wanted. They've executed their plan perfectly. Now we had a splinter in the group. The rogue guy who's been a problem, he's gone. Mm-hmm. That almost could be thought of as an advantage for our criminals now, because now the unreasonable guy is gone. So we need to have a moment where now, the good guys kind of come back and take advantage of the instability and kind of get a win in there for themselves before the final showdown. So I think very well executed at this point.
Okay, excellent. All right, so today our segment is a game. We are going to play 70s movie trivia potpourri.
Okay.
And so I will have five trivia questions about movies from the 70s for you, and we'll
Okay.
see what your knowledge of movies from the 70s are like. And once again, this will be completely random, so I will spin the wheel, and we will see what question comes up for Alex.
Sounds good. I will say my prime demo, for movie trivia is definitely the 2010s and then probably the 90s. But 70s is better than 80s for me, so I feel okay about this.
Okay. All right. So, in what 1971 film did Angela Lansbury and David Tomlinson adventure to the Isle of Naboombo? And this is a Disney classic movie. How's that? I'll
A
add that for you.
Disney classic with
Yes.
Angela Lansbury. That is not Beauty and the Beast. Okay. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not gonna get it.
Okay, have you ever heard of
Oh wait, is it wait, hold on. Is it Bedknobs and
Yes,
Broomsticks?
it is.
Nice.
I was just about to tell you that. That's good. Good that you
I needed to give up on myself before it came to me. So there we go.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let us spin the wheel again and see what we get next. Okay, what two movies from the 1970s had five acting nominations at the Oscars?
Are they linked, or it's just
There's
they
no
are two
link.
movies
There's
that had
no
them?
link. There's no link between them.
Five
The only
Oscar
link is that they were
nominations.
both nominated for five acting nominations.
Right. Okay. Is it Nashville is one of them?
No.
Darn. Okay. The Godfather Part Two?
The Godfather Part Two is one of them, yes.
Okay. Trying to think of like a movie that has like a good like a big ensemble that would have gotten nominated. Like Kramer versus Kramer had a lot of nominations, but not enough people in it, I don't think, to get to five. Les Mis?
From 1970s? What Les Mis movie was
Oh no. Not Les Mis. I
there?
meant Cabaret, which is a different French musical.
Yes. No, Cabaret also doesn't have five
Cabaret is
acting
not it. Okay.
nominations.
Okay. How many guesses am I getting? I've gotten two wrong
As
answers and
many
one
as
right
you
answer.
want.
Okay.
Okay, this movie came out in 1976. Does that help?
1976. It's not Star Wars. It's not Rocky. Is it The Godfather? No, that's 74. No, I
No,
give up.
Godfather
I don't know.
72.
So, okay.
Right. Okay, I will give you another hint. The actor who won Best Actor for this movie passed away before the Oscars that year. So he won it
Is it
posthumously.
Network?
Yes, it is. It's Network. Yes.
Nice. Okay.
So
Okay.
Network, the nominations were Peter Finch for Best Actor, who he won. William Holden for Best Actor, obviously didn't win because Peter Finch won. Best actress
Yeah.
was Faye Dunaway. Best supporting actor was Ned Beatty. And best supporting actress was Beatrice Straight, who also won.
Nice.
Okay, and for The Godfather
The
Part
Godfather
Two,
Part Two.
any idea who the actors were?
Well, I know De Niro, right? and Pacino.
De Niro won Best Supporting Actor. Pacino
was nominated but didn't win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was Brando nominated again?
No.
Okay.
Brando wasn't in the second one.
Oh, he's not in part two. Yeah. Okay.
He's De Niro.
Right. Was Diane Keaton nominated?
No. So you have Talia Shire for Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Lee Strasberg for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, and Michael Gazzo for Best Actor in a Supporting Role.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, excellent. Very nice. Nicely done. Okay. We will move on to the next one. Let's spin the wheel once again. In 1974, The Godfather Part II was nominated for 11 Oscars. How many did it win? And a bonus is being able to tell me what are the ones that it won.
Wait, okay. So it got five acting nominations.
Right.
So
there's 11 nominations. So the question is, how many did it win?
Right, I know. But so getting five Oscar nominations for acting means that it at least didn't get all 11. Because that would mean that's impossible, right? Was it nine?
Well, let's put it this way. Of the five, how many did I tell you before won?
Two. Right?
No.
One.
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 De Niro.
Right.
De Niro's the only one that won.
So is it seven?
No, the answer is six. Very close.
Damn. Okay.
Right.
Wow. Okay. I thought more. Well, obviously, I thought more.
Okay. So
it's not even close to the record. Okay.
No, not even.
I thought it was closer to the record.
Nope. No. It won Best Picture. It won Best Director. It won Best Screenplay, Best Art Direction, and Best Musical Score. Plus, it won De Niro's Supporting Actor. It lost Pacino as Best Actor. The two supporting actors that we talked about before, Lee Strasberg and Michael Gazzo, Talia Shire for Best Supporting Actress, and it lost Costume Design. So it got six out of the 11.
Who did it lose Costume Design to?
I can check if you want.
who doesn't know the answer to the trivia question?
No, Cabaret was in 72. That wouldn't have been Cabaret. Because Cabaret really beat the first one by
the first Godfather.
The Great Gatsby.
Ah. Well, fair.
Redford Gatsby. Okay.
Good costumes.
All right.
Not such a good movie though.
No, not at all. But better than the later version of it.
Oh, don't say that.
I
love that movie.
Okay. That's fair.
Baz Luhrmann all the way.
All right, now we will spin the wheel once again. Okay, in the 1976 Oscar winner Rocky, where did Adrian work?
At a diner?
She worked in a pet shop.
Ah, okay. I did not know that answer. I've never seen the original Rocky.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
All right. Now we will spin the wheel one final time for this game for this week.
Okay. I feel like I've done okay. I haven't totally embarrassed myself.
Okay. In the 1977 movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, what is the name of the mountain that serves as a landing site for the alien spacecraft?
So I've honestly seen this movie. I went and saw this movie in theaters like last year when they did the anniversary re-release. Incredible. Incredible re-release. Loved the film. Loved everything about it. I will never be able to tell you the name of that mountain.
Okay, so it's known as Devil's Tower.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Great film. Watch it.
All right, so now we will play once again the Name That Remake.
Yes.
Let us spin the wheel and see what remake we've come up with for today. Okay. So the original movie came out in 1973, and the remake came out in 1997. And it is about an assassin who is sent to go kill a political figure.
In the Line of Fire?
The Line of Fire came out in 1991.
Okay. So, no. Okay. And 97, so it's not the... It's not the... It's not that movie that I'm now forgetting the name of, because that came out in 2004. The Manchurian Candidate. It's not that, because that came out later. Political assassination movie from 1997. The Candidate?
The Candidate didn't deal with an assassination.
I know, but I was hoping maybe. I haven't seen that movie. I don't know. Can I have another hint?
The remake features Bruce Willis.
It's not 12 Monkeys, is it?
No, that's 95.
Okay.
And he's not...
It's not Disney's The Kid, although that would have been more interesting. Bruce Willis movie from 1997. It's not a Die Hard movie. That's not a remake.
No.
I should be able to get this off of Bruce Willis and 1997, but I am blanking. I don't know.
Okay, Sidney Poitier is also in the movie. That help at all?
Nope. I don't know.
Okay. Also, Richard Gere is in the movie.
I got nothing. I don't think I've ever heard of this movie.
Okay, it's the Jackal.
Nope. No idea what that is.
The Day of the Jackal from 1973, where someone, an assassin, is sent to go try and kill the Gaul. And in the remake from 1997, so Bruce Willis is the assassin that's sent to go take out the... a political figure.
They did a TV miniseries.
Yes, they did.
The Day of the Jackal, with starring Eddie Redmayne for Peacock.
That's right, and Corey Johnson was also in that.
There you go.
Yeah.
If you had said it was also a miniseries on Peacock starring Eddie Redmayne, I would have gotten it immediately.
Ah, is it the end? Okay. All right. Well, so I apologize then for not telling you that one.
No, that's okay. I'm probably the only person, other than maybe Corey Johnson, who knows that Eddie Redmayne starred in a miniseries on Peacock called Day of the Jackal.
It's possible.
I heard it was pretty good, though.
Yes.
People who watched it liked it.
I haven't had a chance to watch it.
I didn't know that was a movie in 1997. I've never heard of that.
1973.
Well, the original, yeah. Right. But the 97 remake, 97. I did not know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Yes, you can follow me on Blue Sky at Alex Marcus. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow all the work that I do by going to thepopbreak.com, clicking on the podcast tab, seeing all the shows that I supervise and co-host over there. Subscribe to our podcast at The Pop Break on all major podcasting platforms. Over there, once a month, Bill versus the MCU is my main podcast, where me and my co-host Bill Blatkin, we talk about all the crazy, wild, wonderful things that happen in Marvel entertainment, whether it's movies or television. We've watched all 5 phases of the MCU. We've watched the Defenders saga over on Netflix. We've watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We've watched the X-Men films and Blade and Fantastic Four, all that. Right now, we're covering our Marvel Entertainment, the Animated Adventures, where we're covering a lot of the recent Marvel animated series that have been out on streaming over the last few years. So that's MODOK and Hitmonkey. It's the What If TV show, all three seasons of that, and also Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Eyes of Wakanda, and Marvel Zombies. So that's what we're doing this fall. You can check that out. Also, you can subscribe to It's Complicated, a Tom Holland podcast. Me and my friend Manish Mathur are reviewing every single film of Tom Holland's career. We started with The Impossible this past spring. We're doing it twice a month, every month, all the way until July 2026, when he has his big month starring in both Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey and Spider-Man Brand New Day.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much for that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Ramen. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieramen.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieramen@movierob.net. So, Alex, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish this week off?
Yeah, it's Fun Day Friday, right?
That is, it is. All right. So, until tomorrow. Achoo.
Good insight.